And so the bears do come in close to the pad. Sometimes you got to get up and turn around to get the photos of them. But they 99% of the time they honor the pad and that territory as humans, and they have the rest of the whole valley. So there's a million things that can see you at McNeil. I won't list all the different species, but there's a lot of bear behaviors that you can see, including here's another one standing up. It looks like threatening. It looks very posed, like in the airport, but it's he's just trying to get a better view and sniff you. Sometimes you can watch a female nursing her cub right near you because of the trust. Sometimes you can watch bears making love. Sometimes you can watch a couple of young bears just hanging out in the sunshine, watching mom. Bring us a fish, mom. Sometimes you can watch mom when the young bears aren't hanging on her. And sometimes you can even watch the big males laying back on a sunny day and sometimes just falling asleep while two other pairs of bears are either playing or getting to know each other or whatever's going on. So many behaviors can be seen at McNeil. One famous now retired black bear biologist from Northern Alaska and Western Canada came to McNeil and said, it often takes me 2 or 3 days to get one bear in the scope and get a behavior from it. He said, here you have a lifetime of bear behaviors every day. A biologist loves that. Oh, sometimes you can see dancing bears. And sometimes it's not a dance. Larry has mentioned to me that in latter years, there are more big males that come in to the falls than there used to be. It used to be a few big males and a lot of sows with cubs, but now the big males have grown up. They're the bears that have grown up with neutral habituation, and they accept the humans there, whereas the already mature bears didn't want to walk down in front of the humans that much. So these bears overpopulate, so to say, the falls with big guys, and they fight each other to get the best fishing sites. And there are, depending on the flow of the river and everything, there are the best fishing places. And so there's a lot of drama now among the big males. And that makes for a lot of more dramatic photography as well. But there's one other fight I need to talk about, and that's not a fight between bears. It's a fight among humans. And it was happening on Larry's 30th year, 2005, between trophy hunting guides and the BOG, the Board of Game, and the people that wanted to protect the McNeil bears. And what was being considered was opening up more state land close, in fact, right alongside McNeil, and some other benefits to the bear hunters. And it would have threatened things a lot more because we know. Ooh, that didn't come out very well. The biologist before Larry had marked some bears with radio collars and color formations that tell you who the bear is when you see it. They had marked these bears, but to do that, they had to fire darts and basically stress out the bears. And so that ended when Larry took over. But some of those back in the 60s were tracked all over the peninsula. So they leave McNeil and just fan out and go to probably regular migration routes for each one to find other food. And those bears would be wandering out onto the territory that was proximal to McNeil, to the ref to the sanctuary. And so they would be readily shot. And there's a lot of big bears at McNeil, and so they're the trophies, so to speak. And Larry felt that he has betrayed his bears. He had given them the neutral habituation to humans. And indeed, now he might have set them up to walk in front of the hunters that were just outside the boundaries of McNeil. He also felt that the Board of Game would be betraying the bears, the law that I read you about how to protect McNeil bears, and Larry himself. And he retired in 2005. Less out of frustration, I think, and more out of the ability to maybe fight from outside Fish and Game to maintain the integrity of the McNeil population. And it did work. It did work. They didn't open up those areas. So that was a win for McNeil. About 2 years after Larry left, there was a young fellow in there trying to think of his name and I can't think of it now. A good guy was in, he stayed for 2 years as a manager. And then Tom Griffin was Larry's protege for many years. And Tom Griffin was appointed sanctuary manager. And he's been there ever since, doing a great job. And so Larry actually came back and volunteered a few weeks to several weeks a year just to help out, give the staff a break and get things going. He appreciated the way that the Anchorage Department of Fish and Game had increased the staff size and some time off and really supported the McNeil staff. And Larry was happy with that. And so he came back and was volunteering. And then it was 2011. He was out to volunteer, but at the same time he had been putting in for a three-way permit. You can get a permit for one person, two people, or three. And he got a three-person permit in 2011, and it brought the family out together because Colleen used to work there with him for a couple of years. They got married there. And then Kiana came along, and now he had three people that he just didn't want to let go of. So there it was. He was out there with his family, re-enjoying McNeil with the three of them together, 2011. That was just Larry imitating bears, because he does that all the time. That very summer, July 19th, I believe it was, Larry was at the falls, and they counted the highest number of brown bears ever seen at McNeil, and it's still a standing record. They counted 76 bears at a time. Now, there's about 30 of them in this slide, so imagine 76 at the falls. And that was on the hourly count. In between the hourly counts, they're considered unofficial, but they actually counted 80 bears together at McNeil. So there's a record to be broken. But Larry was extremely happy because the bears were there in higher numbers than ever. And that was the goal of the legislation in the beginning. Well, there's still a few issues going on. The proposed Pebble Mine has had a major setback, but our governor now, as most people listening know, is trying to reignite that. Pebble Mine would bring in noise, roads, trash, fed bears, cut off migration routes, and just a loss of wilderness by having another port just up the beach from McNeil River. So we're hoping that that goes down. So I just mentioned Pebble Mine. This is the same slide I used earlier because it's the same fight now. Instead of trying to open more land next to the refuge and the sanctuary, the Board of Game is either already done it or is thinking about increasing the number of permits for trophy hunters, and thereby increasing the take, which is already high outside of McNeil there. So it's pretty scary again. and it would mean more hunter killed trophy bears from McNeil. And I think this is where I want to read you something that Larry wrote about this. And it's in the book. In fact, it's on the fly cover because it's so important. But he said, "Do you want to make it all it can be as the legislature intended?" Speaking about the sanctuary. "Or do you want to share it with hunting? Sharing is exactly what we do," meaning Alaska Department of Fish and Game, "for most areas. How about for just this one area, you don't do that?" Seems logical to a lot of us, but we'll see what the politics carry. So hopefully what we'll have is a wild wilderness scene preserved here, a trust with the bears preserved, and a large bear population congregation preserved. That's what we're fighting for. McNeil is one of the rare places that you can literally cross trails with bears and do it in peace. And the other part of the McNeil experience I want to mention is that human camaraderie that comes around by experiencing the wilderness setting, people you never met before that are required to work together. It's just a wonderful wilderness community, and a lot of people comment about that as much as about the bears. So there's so much more I'd like to tell you. I'm afraid about my time, but you can always try the book. Larry and I don't make a lot of money off of it. We wrote it and published it. University of Alaska Press published it, but we got it published in order to share the story. And much more of the story is alive and well in that book. So I think it's available. Well, I know it's available on Amazon and from the Friends of McNeil River. And I meant to say before that for more information about those two things, Pebble Mine and more trophy hunter permits, you can find out a lot more from and up to date from the Friends of McNeil River website or the McNeil River Alliance website. But the best thing you can do is try to get out there and put your boot tracks in amongst the bear tracks. And to do that, you got to go through that lottery. It's open this month to the end of February. You can get on the website and see what the rules are, how to apply. I think it's $30 to apply. I forget what the odds are or were last year, but I think they'll be back up this year again, meaning that you'll have less of a chance. But consider it, even if you don't want to go, consider just applying and giving them the $30 because it's a wonderful donation to McNeil. This, all of those $30 application fees go directly to support McNeil. Now I have one more thing I want to share with you. And again, it's in the book here. The poet Gary Snyder wrote this in his afterword to a book, The Sacred Paul, published in 1985. And he wrote this, "And each of us, where we live and in association with our neighbors and comrades, must join in a struggle that is not only against oppressive social systems, but in defense of the land, in defense of the earth, air, water, where we live. In taking up this defense, we will become in our own place aboriginals of that place and cease to fear bears." Thank you for being here. I'll answer whatever questions I can.
Thanks, Jeff. As always, awesome. Thank you for the wonderful presentation. A couple people who have been to McNeil who are saying it was the best bear viewing trip they've ever done. Stacy asks, "Has social distancing led to smaller visitor groups? And do the bears notice that the groups are smaller? Does that affect bear behavior?"
I think let me answer the first one first. It probably hasn't reduced the size of the groups for the most part. And I think the bears recognize a smaller group, But unless it's very much smaller, they put up with it. It's not a huge surprise because it's still people and they're still going at the same time. All the other things are the same. So maybe they get out with 6 or 8 people instead. But that's one reason that they have the substitute things. If you don't win the lottery, but you get a substitute chance, then you can go out and fill in. And probably more substitutes were used last year and will be used this year to fill out the group. And they might end up, some people may not come because of the pandemic, even though they plan on it. And then they change their minds if something goes haywire with the pandemic. Then the subs get a chance to go out like regular members of the group. So I think that's one reason they have subs to fill out the group each time.
Bill, who I know has been to McNeil and loves it, he asks, has the peak season for McNeil shifted at all? And can you tell everyone more about what peak season at McNeil is?
Well, peak season is basically the peak run of dog salmon, of chum salmon. And it used to be toward the end of July. And of course, this depends on how high the river is and how many fish are coming in this year. And in the old days, even how many fish were caught by the fishermen before they got to McNeil River. Now there's a pretty good number of fish coming up. And so the most fish used to come up in the latter part, the late July, and those would be the best permits to get. And now it's moved back sort of toward mid-July, but it's going to vary each year. And you can guess somewhere within like a 2 week band that now it might be to get out somewhere near the middle of June of July rather than late July like it used to be.
Teresa, who I know also went to McNeil, I think just last summer and raves about it. She asks if fewer people put in for the lottery, does that give the Board of Game ammunition? In other words, should we all put in for the lottery just so that we can show support that there is, for wildlife viewing?
Well, the Board of Game might use those numbers, but the support is more important, and that doesn't go through the Board of Game. That goes through actually the department, and goes straight to McNeil. So for the financial support reason, yes, and for the potential political reason, I see the potential there, but I don't know how much that would affect things. I'll tell you what would affect things, and in the back of my book, there's a section on what Larry and I talked about would improve fish and games management of McNeil. Not that they haven't already improved and that they aren't doing a good job, but one of the things that people have suggested is the Board of Game should actually be a Board of Wildlife, and it should include maybe one wildlife watching tour guide and a photographer or two, and just people that are wildlife watchers that maybe professionally or maybe not, but to get a fuller look at protecting all the wildlife and protecting the bears and not just hunting them.
And Wayne Hall, who I know has been very active in this issue, did note that there is a current proposal to Board of Game to increase brown bear bag limits to one a year. Currently, it's one every 4 years for resident hunters in Game Unit 9, which is that area. And he also mentions McFit Creek is also great before the gathering at the falls, and Lower McNeil River and Ender's Island is great after the falls. There's no bad time to go to McNeil.
Actually, there is a bad time, and that's in April. And there's a short chapter in the book about this because I went out with Larry and Tommy Griffin and one other fella in April for a spring ski, and it was 28 below, We had to dig through 10 feet of snow even to get to the cabin. It was a glorious time, but there were certainly no bears until late on our way back. We saw one bear coming out of its den. But during the summer, June and July, there's no bad time to go. That's for sure.
Well, and that's one other question we just got. What's the temperature like in the summer from Marion?
It's the wind and the rain to worry about. They seem to reduce the temperature. And when you get a warm, sunny day, you have too much clothes on out there. But it's typically chilly because of rain or mist and winds. So you want to take a lot of layers and good rain gear. And the more of those you take and the more rain gear you take, the sunnier it'll turn out to be. That's Murphy's Law.
Yeah, that's the rule. Marion, you have some questions about the permit going in circles on the website. So to apply for the permit, when you're on the page, there's a lot of information about the permit and the application process, and it ultimately funnels you to this ADF&G store, and you can go to that store, which I put in the chat, and then you say shop now, which seems kind of silly to shop, but it's shopping for the permit. Once you create a login, there will be options to buy hunting and fishing tags, and then there's a section for wildlife viewing, and it has the application for Round Island, which is walrus viewing, and then McNeil, which is the bears. So, and if you have any continued tech trouble, maybe try calling ADF&G. Christina, who's the road tripping homeschooling mama, I think, she says, my 10-year-old wants to know if you can do a demonstration of walking away fast, but looking like you're going slow.
If I could be out in front of a sow grizzly and walking between her and her cubs, I think I could make a demonstration out of that. But I think the idea was not to run and take smaller steps, but move along quickly. Maybe you could demonstrate it for me.
Yes, she says they're practicing. This is great. It's exercise. And
see, that's part of Larry's humor, though. I mean, a very tense time for some of those people. And he just used humor the whole way through. And in fact, when we got to the other side of the estuary, Larry was, of course, in the lead. And then he stood right at the edge of the water after he got out and high-fived each of us as we went by, like, you just cheated death again. And the truth is, he was being droll. It was drollery because he knew exactly what he was doing. And we all had faith in him. We had trust in Larry in that case, and it worked.
Yeah, he seems like quite an enigma. What an amazing person. And great experiences. I can't believe that airplane photo. That's really incredible. That it's even there, and then two of you shared it with not many people can say they had a bear as a roommate, even for a night.
Let alone in a C-46.
Yeah, my goodness. Well, I think that's all that we have for questions. But again, so many, there's a lot of virtual applause happening for you, Jeff. So thank you so much for putting this together.
Well, I haven't given a talk for a while, and I was pretty nervous, but I want to thank everybody who did listen in, and I want to thank you, Nicole, and AWA for inviting me.
That was Jeff Fair, Alaska field biologist and author of In Wild Trust, talking about the McNeil River State Game Sanctuary. This was a Wildlife Wednesday presentation put on by the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, and they've got more of these coming up. February 17th is about East Cook Inlet razor clams, an update on the population since the 2015 clamming closure. March 10th is sea otters in Southeast Alaska. Graduate student field biologists share their work on the sea otter, crab, clam, and abalone populations off Prince of Wales Island. March 17th is Ecoacoustics, Theory and Soundscape Ecology in Alaska's Wilderness. And April 21st is Hummingbird Banding on the Kenai Peninsula. All of those talks are at 7 p.m. held over Zoom. You can find the links on the Alaska Wildlife Alliance page on Facebook. And coming up this week at KDLL, we've got a Gherkin Radio Theater doubleheader. The hunter becomes the hunted in The Most Dangerous Game. And the Gherkin crew heads out west for an episode of Gunsmoke. You've got two chances to catch the show, 7 p.m. Thursday, February 11th, and 6 p.m. Saturday, February 13th. It might be a stretch to count this as a Valentine's Day thing, but personally, I love Gherkin Radio Theater, so that will work for me. Moving on to the community calendar, the Kenai Community Library has a winter bingo activity this month. For each completed row, earn a ticket for a Kindle prize drawing. For completing at least one row, you get an ice cream coupon. Complete and return your sheet through February 26th, and the prize drawing will be held at noon. The Kenai Library also has a story walk activity this month. Read and enjoy by following the numbered signs outside the library through February 28th. Friends of the Soldotna Library organization is accepting donations for its book and art sales, which fund programs at the library. Contact Vicki at 262-6221 to drop off a donation. The Friends of the Soldotna Library Board of Directors also has an opening. If you're interested in joining that board, visit soldotnalibraryfriends.com for more information. A joint Kenai-Soldotna Chamber of Commerce luncheon will be held from noon to 1 p.m. February 17th at the Kenai Visitor Center. The topic will be an economic update for the Central Peninsula from Tim Dillon with the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District. You need to RSVP for that one by 5 p.m. Tuesday by contacting the Kenai or Soldotna Chamber of Commerce. Farm and Food Friday is an informal monthly meetup for Central Peninsula people interested in local food and local farming. It's 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. the third Friday of the month, currently held over Zoom. Everyone is welcome. Register in advance through kenaisoilandwater.org. The Kenai National Wildlife Refuge has snowshoes for loan Saturdays through March 13th. You can take a self-led family snowshoe walk. Call Ranger Michelle at 907-251-5642 to sign up. And the Salteshi Trails Association has a Tour of Salteshi ski race coming up at 11 a.m. February 21st. It's a 20-kilometer skate or classic race or a 40-kilometer skate race. There's a price break for ski association members. Find out more at touroftsaltesh.org. This has been the Kenai Conversation on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL, Kenai Soldotna, 91.9 FM. I'm Jenny Nyman. Thanks for tuning in.